This is Jim Inkster. Coming next on the show, we will recap LSU's 44-41 defeat at Athens, Georgia Saturday as the Tigers and the Bulldogs had a shootout to remember between the hedges. What implications are there as far as LSU's pursuit of conference and national honors? We'll talk about it with Cody Worsham of Tiger Rag and Jeff Palermo, sports director for the Louisiana Radio Network. Also, former state senator Ann Duplessis, who's now involved in education in a big way, is president of the Louisiana Federation for Children. She will comment on Governor Jindal's stance against the Justice Department's lawsuit regarding vouchers. She's in favor of what the governor is doing. And we'll hear from two talented brothers from New Orleans, Brennan and Zachary Manuel. They're the sons of the fabulous singer Philip Manuel. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the Baton Rouge calling area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. In a few moments, we'll talk about an amazing game at Athens, Georgia Saturday as LSU came up on the short end, losing to Georgia 44-41. A remarkable shootout, two great performances from the quarterbacks, Aaron Murray of Georgia and LSU's Zach Bettenberger. We'll talk about it with Cody Worsham and Jeff Palermo. LSU now 4-1, heading to Mississippi State as a 10-point favorite. The Tigers have dropped to 10th in one poll and 11th in another. We begin with Ann Duplessis, the former state senator who is involved in education. She is president of the Louisiana Federation for Children, and she is also a member of the LSU Board of Supervisors. I'm sure you were somewhat disappointed by Saturday's outcome, Senator.
Yes, I was, and I don't want to talk about it.
You're not ready to fire the coach or anything like that?
No, not ready to do that.
Okay. Well, you're involved with children, and you're a Democrat from New Orleans, and you're supportive of Governor Jindal on a few things, but in particular this lawsuit by the Department of Justice against the voucher program in Louisiana. Why are you in accord with the administration in this particular action?
Well, you know, it really isn't an issue of me being in accord with the administration. It's me being in accord with kids and children. I mean, this whole issue, as you know, I helped to lead the efforts in 2008 on all multiple educational reform issues and parental choice issues, and vouchers is just an absolute natural piece with regards to providing better alternatives for kids.
So why did the Department of Justice misfire, in your estimation, in this lawsuit?
You know, in my opinion, I think it is pure politics, politics at its best. You know, the department, there have been many efforts to try and stop education reform, to try and stop the awarding of scholarships and expansion of the program. And I believe that this is just a one more attempt to derail all of the wonderful efforts that have been made.
297-5633. Some may be stunned to hear a Democratic senator from New Orleans saying that the politics involved in this lawsuit are not from the governor's office but from the Justice Department. What kind of politics are we talking about?
You know, they're multitudes. I mean, regardless of the feelings between the two parties, at the end of the day, it really, this issue, I think there's a lot of bipartisan support on both sides of the coin and in the middle with regards to what resources should be available to families as they try and help their children.
Senator Duplessis, you were a member of the legislature as a proud Democrat. I'm sure you know that most members of your party are probably shaking their heads and saying that they have a different point of view. Do you understand that?
Yeah, I do. You know, and in some instances, some cases, I don't understand it. I mean, you know, I think that what we all have, as I continue to say, we all have to get past is what letter is behind each one of those politicians as it relates to a D, R, an R, or an I. I mean, at the end of the day, if they clear, you know, they have their opinions on how they believe we should be educating our kids. In my opinion, I think that we've got to begin to innovate. We've got to look at the world today and realize that the way we educated kids or the systems that were designed to help our children grow and prosper is no longer relevant, and it's not working. We all know that. Everybody knows that the public schools and the systems that are currently in place have not worked and are not working. And so it is, to me, it's a disservice to try and continue to fix something that is clearly broken. So let's innovate. Let's look at new ways of doing things and different ways of educating our kids.
Why are vouchers the answer?
Well, they're not the only answer. What we're saying is give parents a choice on how what type of school, what type of environment that they want, that their children works best in. You know, I personally am in support of various means of parental choice. Charters, I'm a big proponent of charter schools. I am a proponent for providing the resources to those proven opportunities for our kids.
297-5633, and as you can imagine, Senator Duplessis has some people who are supportive of her and some who are not supportive. Now, tell us about the Louisiana Federation for Children. You recently took this post as president of this group. What is this particular organization doing?
Well, the Louisiana Federation for Children is a project of the American Federation for Children and Alliance for School Choice, and it is just primarily dedicated to promoting and protecting education reform issues, voucher programs throughout the country to help aid low and moderate middle income children. And so we are really beginning to work along with many other of the organizations in the state and across the country in that pursuit. I mean, we have a number of other organizations such as Stand for Children and Black Alliance for Educational Option, which I was a board member for a number of years, that are all dedicated to providing better outcomes for our kids.
Now, these groups, rightly or wrongly, have been depicted as conservative organizations. Would that be an accurate description?
The Black Alliance for Educational Options. Really?
Well, it's taking some conservative viewpoints.
Regardless of how people try and spin the rationale or the reasoning for their point of view, at the end of the day, who is benefiting? I mean, who is benefiting? Whether it's a conservative, you know, they're a conservative Democrat or a Republican at the end of the day, we have children who are now being given opportunities for better life, for better outcomes. We have now an ability to provide better outcomes for the state of Louisiana. I mean, the main thing that we hear when I was in the legislature was that in order to attract industry, in order to attract companies, that we had to have a well-educated workforce. I mean, what we are doing is not only providing better outcomes for children and families, but we're providing better outcomes for this state, hopefully, so that in 10 years from now, 20 years from now, the workforce that is available for business and industry to even be attracted to Louisiana will be one that's one of the best.
Well, last month, the U.S. Justice Department sued Louisiana and New Orleans federal court to block the vouchers for students in public school systems that are under federal desegregation orders. The first year of private school vouchers impeded the desegregation process, according to the federal Justice Department. Now, do you share that viewpoint? My guess is the answer is no.
The answer is absolutely no. I mean, the government's argument that, you know, that the loss of students through the voucher program reversed a lot of the progress that they say was made. And actually, if this desegregation order was working, if it was still relevant, why would it still be here and still be in place 50 years, you know, for 50 years? Obviously, it is not working and is not doing what it was intended to do. I mean, one of the things that it said that you know, that there was this shift that the composition of the schools. I mean, you're talking about going from like a 29.6% white ratio to 28.9%. I mean, really, that in and of itself is going to cause some crazy composition shift. I think that, again, it really is just a political ploy. I mean, 81% or 86% of the students who are in this program, 86 are African American. 91% are minority students. So the whole idea, the whole concept behind the desegregation order 50 years ago was so that we would provide better educational resources to African American kids or minority kids. The whole reason for it being in existence is now slapping us dead in the face and counter.
All right, 297-5633 is your number. And we're visiting with Senator Ann Duplessis, the president of the Louisiana Federation for Children. And she is passionate about these vouchers being a good thing. And we will go to the phone lines in just a moment in our remaining time with Senator Duplessis. Governor Jindal, of course, lambasted the Justice Department, saying the federal government is on the wrong track in this case. And we'll get some callers' viewpoints. If you'd like to join us, 877-217-5757, wherever you may be. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Ann Duplessis.
Yes, Senator Duplessis, you talk about benefits to the children. Do you think that the children going to voucher schools would benefit if those schools were held to the same testing standards as public schools?
Well, the schools that are participating in the program are required to test the students. So there is an accountability measure built into this program. I mean, so we are not by any means saying that we are allowing or we want to put kids into a school that we are not going to hold accountable. Absolutely, we're going to hold these schools accountable, and we're going to require some of the same basic testing that if they were in a public school environment.
297-5633 is your number. Ann Duplessis, also a member of the LSU Board of Supervisors, and you can imagine I've gotten a few inquiries about the refusal, at least I guess that would be the right word, the refusal until Judge Clark interceded, by the LSU Board to reveal the names of the those who sought the LSU presidency. Was that a good move by the board?
I don't want to comment on that. You know, I think I'd like to stay focused on what we are here to talk about today, and that's this our kids.
I would take a yes or a no, but if you don't want to talk about it, then that's good. You're the only African American and the only woman on the LSU board, Senator. Is that a good representation of the state of Louisiana?
Well, I think that it is a good move to try and bring more diversity to the board. Hopefully, you know, in the future we can expand and diversify the makeup of the board, but this is always a good start.
Okay. 297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org, and 877-217-5757. We'll return with Senator Duplessis, president of the Louisiana Federation for Children, for a few more moments on the voucher dilemma, involving the federal government having concerns about Louisiana's actions and the governor shooting back. And we'll talk about LSU and Georgia Saturday in Athens. Tigers falling 3 points short. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. If you'd like to reach us online, a bit more time with former state senator, Democrat from New Orleans, Ann Duplessis, now president of the Louisiana Federation for Children, who's not happy about the Justice Department taking aim at Louisiana's voucher program. She says it's politics. Now, Senator, I've gotten some emails from folks who asked about your appointment to the board. You were appointed by Governor Jindal, correct?
Yes, I was.
Now, the question is, does that in any way affect your position on this as far as your staunch defense of a program that is near and dear to the governor?
Absolutely not. If you will recall, before I was ever anywhere near supportive of some of the issues of the governor in 2008, I helped to get the voucher program in a pass. Prior to Governor Jindal being elected as governor, under then Kathleen Blanco, my goal, my focus and my energies were all with education reform and school reform. And so if you look at most of the legislation that I've passed, most of the focus that I've had was very, very much targeted towards creating better outcomes for children and other alternatives than the same old broken system that we currently have.
Evan in Mid-City. Evan, you're on the air with Ann Duplessis.
Good morning, Senator Duplessis. I used to live in your district in the Lower Ninth Ward, and you provided a great service, which was called the Lower Ninth Ward Advocacy Center. And there was a great lady there, Linda Harris, who I think never received a lot of recognition. And I just wanted you if you could quickly talk about her legacy. She recently passed 2 years ago, but she was a really force for the Lower Ninth Ward community. I know that you worked with her. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for that. I mean, she was one of, actually, Glenda actually ran against me in my first pursuit for the state Senate. But I recognized at the time that Glenda's heart and her mind, her soul was dedicated to helping poor families, was dedicated to helping children. And so I naturally, moved toward her. I then asked her to come and be a part of my team because I needed someone like that whose heart, whose mind, whose soul wanted to have better opportunities for kids in the Lower Ninth Ward and kids across the state. And so I thank you for reminding me that she was a part of our life, a part of a legacy that helped many kids and helped me to help many kids get better opportunities.
Now, in a poll that is being touted by On Message, the firm in which Timmy Teeple, the governor's advisor, is affiliated with, more than 60% of the voters oppose the Department of Justice lawsuit. Is that what you're hearing from people where you are, or do you hear otherwise?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you look at this scholarship program, and again, the families that are being impacted, you have, you know, think about this. The scholarship program is strictly voluntary. Parents are not forced to participate in this program. And so when you have more than 6,000 or 8,000 families who are now benefiting across the state, you know, a number of them here in the New Orleans area, they, of course, are going to be very disturbed and upset that the very opportunity that they are given to get their kids into safer, better environments that are now somehow being played with or toyed with or threatened.
Well, Senator, where is this going? Where do you think it will end up? Will there be?
You know, I that's a very good question. Our hope is that the Department of Justice would just simply stop it, drop it, and begin to work with us in this, and I guess the common objective, and that is to provide better resources. And so I know that, you know, a number of families, four families, Bayo and the Goldwater Institute have filed an injunction to stop the lawsuit. And so, you know, our hopes and our prayer is that we can somehow find common ground and use these types of innovative programs and resources together to help kids and leave the rest of that stuff alone.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. Good to hear from you, Senator Ann Duplessis.
Well, thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. We're joined now in studio by two gentlemen who cover LSU sports with great vigor. Jeff Palermo, the news and sports director for Louisiana Radio Network, and Cody Worsham, the editor of Tiger Rag magazine. And it was quite a shootout Saturday in Athens, Georgia. Georgia prevailing 44-41, LSU falling to 11th in one poll, 10th in another. And the Tigers 4-1 and still in the hunt for conference and national honors. Jeff Palermo, let's begin with you. What implications are there as a result of the loss at Georgia?
Well, it obviously, they now no longer have a margin of error. You know, another loss, and they're knocked out of the national championship hunt for sure, and most likely out of any conference championship consideration. So I think the other ramification is that it's a huge learning lesson. And, you know, this what happened on Saturday, you saw hints that it could possibly occur through the first four games. They just had not played a team as talented as Georgia up until then, and then Georgia exposed them and playing on the road for the first time. It just it was a perfect storm for LSU as far as having the type of performance it ended up having on Saturday. Just a lot of things went wrong for them, and they really got to get back to the drawing board because there was so much miscommunication in the secondary, and then the defensive line didn't help either. They just put absolutely no pressure on Aaron Murray.
Well, LSU is a 10-point favorite over Mississippi State, a team it's defeated 13 straight times, but playing in Starkville and with a defense that was at times porous, and that might be a kind way of describing. Cody Worsham, it would seem that Les Miles, if he wants to contend for SEC honors and BCS honors, which I'm sure he does, he's got some work to do on the defensive side.
They do. It's a sign of the time, the way that these teams are scoring. And I don't think 2 years ago we could have ever expected LSU and Georgia to shoot out in the 40s and the same thing for Alabama and A&M. So I remember talking to Cam Cameron this summer as he came in, and he sort of saw this coming. He had a quote that he gave me about saying that you better be scoring 35 points a game, and that may not be enough. Well, I don't know that he was trying to down-talk his defense, but I think it's just as much a sign of the times that teams are just scoring, and they're scoring a lot, and I don't know that that's the style of football that Les Miles enjoys, and I think he's continued to hope and express publicly that the SEC defenses will come around, but I'm not sure that they will. I think this may be a new era of college football we're seeing with all these spread offenses and high-scoring games.
Now, Les Miles was quoted after the game as saying he thought Georgia scored too early, that they went ahead with, about a minute 52 to go and left LSU time certainly to get into field goal position and possibly to win the game. But the last drive fell short, Jeff. It seemed that Mettenberger was unstoppable in the second half until that final drive.
Well, Georgia finally got pressure on him. They were a lot more aggressive defensively on that drive than LSU was on Georgia's winning drive. And I just don't know if John Chavis can, you know, sit back and just rush, you know, three, four guys like he was doing in that final drive and expect his young defensive backs to make plays, because they were just very confused. That was the thing. Was just every time Georgia would score a touchdown, you saw two defensive backs looking at each other saying, "I thought you had him." "No, I thought you had him." And that's got to be very difficult for a head coach that's had a defensive coordinator like John Chavis, who's had a lot of success in this league, to see his players just really miss their assignments and just not have an idea of what they're supposed to be doing while they're out on the field.
Well, USC fired its coach yesterday, Lane Kiffin, after his defense gave up 62 points to Arizona State. Joe Oliva on the ready? Things don't go well in the next few weeks?
No, I think John Chavis is safe. But if, you know, this escalates, you know, there could be some position coaches that are not back with LSU next year. And that's just what happens. You know, if this defense goes out and gives up 40 more points to A&M and Ole Miss scores a bunch of points against them and, you know, Alabama does the same thing, you know, there will be some changes on that staff. But still plenty of time to get things corrected. So I think you saw the worst that LSU's defense has to offer, and I expect it will improve. How much it'll improve is remains to be the question.
Well, going back to the championship seasons, and LSU has won two in the last 10 years, and in 03, LSU lost in October to Florida at home, 19-7. In 2007, LSU lost to Kentucky, triple overtime at Lexington. What was that, 37-34, I think?
Yeah, something.
And then lost to Arkansas at home in Tiger Stadium. In the final regular season game, 50-48, I think, was the final in triple overtime. They overcame those defeats. So Georgia's a good team, no doubt. It would seem that, as you state, that if they can put their act together and win their next nine games, then Les Miles will be hoisting the Crystal Trophy again. But a lot has to happen between now and then.
Big if, big if. But they have an offense that has shown that it can score with anybody. And it's kind of like with the Saints, you know, Drew Brees, you know you have a chance to win with him. And I think LSU knows they have a chance to win with them, with Zach Mettenberger. And, you know, I mean, I think their chances are – I don't want to say they're good as far as running the table, but you can't count them out in any game from here on out.
And, Cody, the conference doesn't appear to be – overwhelmingly strong. It may be the strongest conference in the land, again, but still Alabama has some holes. Texas A&M certainly has some of the same problems LSU has, and those are the two big opponents as far as those considered most dangerous on the schedule.
Yeah, and I think the best thing for this LSU defense is their next two games are against Mississippi State and Florida, who are two of the worst offenses in the SEC. I don't think you have to worry about those teams putting up a ton of points, and if they do, then you really have some concerns with this defense. I think overall with the SEC not being quite as deep as it has been in years, it may hurt LSU with the fact that Alabama is cruising now. I mean, if Alabama beats LSU, they're set for another SEC title game appearance, and that's really the only game left that it looks like Alabama will be challenged. So LSU has everything in front of it, but so does Alabama. That looks like it's the matchup that is going to boil down to. But, of course, LSU still has A&M in a home game, and Johnny Football making his one and only appearance in Tiger Stadium. So there's still a couple big games ahead for LSU, and they control their destiny, but it's not going to be easy.
Well, to show how big beating LSU has become, even if it's 3 points at home and a shootout in which both defenses were lackluster, to put it mildly, Mark Bradley of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution wrote, "The Georgia Bulldogs escape September 3-1. They'll exit November 11-1. December 7, they'll play for the SEC title." Jeff Schultz of the same newspaper said, "Georgia officially announced its candidacy for the national title Saturday." They took this win seriously.
Well, their hardest games are behind them. You know, they've beaten South Carolina, who is their main competitor in the East. They took on Clemson and lost a hard-fought game against them, and Clemson's a team that will finish, if not in the top 10, in the top 5 for sure when it's all said and done. So now their games are against East opponents, and while Florida is obviously their biggest rival, as Cody said, Florida's offense probably is not going to be able to keep up with Georgia's offense. So, yeah, if Georgia can remain focused, there's no reason to think that they're not going to be in Atlanta playing whoever comes out of the West.
Well, it's going to be an interesting scenario, and LSU facing Mississippi State. I can remember the day when State was a thorn in LSU's side in a big way between 1974 and 84. On the field, State won 9 times in 11 years. Two of them were forfeited because of rules violations, but It hasn't been that way of late, and LSU is a solid 10-point favorite over Mississippi State. But they had to play Georgia. Les Miles before the season made note of this, saying LSU has to play Georgia and Florida, while Alabama's got Kentucky and Tennessee. I think he has a point.
He's got a very good point, and I think he brought it up again that he's hoping some other teams have to. I forgot what the exact quote was, Quotey, but he said something like, I hope there's other teams that will have to go to Georgia soon. And obviously, speaking of Alabama, I can't remember the last time Alabama's played in Athens. It's been that long ago.
Yeah, and according to the typical rotation of the SEC schedule, and I think that's really what got Miles upset this year, LSU wasn't supposed to go to Athens based on the custom rotation. This was the year that they were supposed to play Kentucky. It didn't work out that way, and he certainly made a fuss about it in the preseason, and he was probably justified, and it's hurt LSU at this point, but they're lucky enough to still have some goals in front of them that they can still achieve.
But if they lose, they trip up, like if they were to lose this week, it could be a long season. Be a very long season.
It'd be a very long season, you're right.
And State is no slouch.
One of these years, State has to beat LSU.
And a few years, they should have beaten LSU.
You know, a couple of years ago, if it wasn't for Chad Jones making some plays, they would have lost. But I don't think it's going to happen Saturday. I think LSU can rebound. And I think it'll be a tough game, though. I think 10-point might, I don't know, maybe it's somewhere around there, or at least it's Mississippi State's at least within striking distance going into the fourth quarter. They've had a week off, so they've had a chance to rest up a little bit and have a chance to dissect LSU. So a little bit of a dangerous game considering LSU could have a hangover effect from what happened last Saturday.
Wonder if Skip Bertman will be going to Starkville for the game.
I don't think so.
Starkville, is those of us who have some appreciation for that fine town, is a nice city with a great heritage. But Skip Bertman, the former LSU baseball coach and athletic director, He made a living as an after-dinner speaker or before-dinner speaker making jokes about Starkville, and he just can't help himself. What did he say? He used to go to Starkville and pay more for a room without a view?
Yeah.
And that was one of the nicer things he said. Yeah. But it's a place where, you're right, one of these years it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
And if it happened this year, LSU would be 4-2 and out of the race for the conference and the BCS. It would be a very long season.
Yeah.
So they talk about the snowballing effect. This game, in many ways, means more than just one game, and I think it's assumed by the LSU fandom, which has gotten overwhelmed with success, that this is a sure victory.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a little bit tougher than what it's being made out to be. Mississippi State's really good in the trenches. They've got a really good young defensive line with a lot of former five-star kids in there, and their offensive line's good too. So, and that's where LSU struggled. It's going to be a tough one.
Well, we'll return for a few more minutes with Jeff Palermo, the news and sports director for the Louisiana Radio Network, and Cody Worsham, the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, 297-5633, your number outside the area, 877-217-5757. Back in 90 seconds on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. The Tigers of LSU came up short, 44-41 at Athens, Georgia. Over 92,000 people at Sanford Stadium in a sea of red rooting on the Georgia Bulldogs, who beat the Fighting Tigers, and LSU will try to rebound this Saturday against Mississippi State. Cody Worsham, editor of Tiger Rag, last week picked LSU to win by three.
LSU to lose by three.
I thought you picked them. Excuse me, that's right. You did pick them to lose by three, and they did lose by three, so you were right on. And the odds makers picked them to lose by three. This week, prior to the line being set, you picked them, Tigers, to win by 10. And sure enough, the line is 10. Are you working for folks in Las Vegas?
I'm not, and I'm not much of a gambler either. So I'll chalk that up to luck. But I think that's a pretty good line. I think LSU's probably just around 10 points better than Mississippi State.
Okay, Jeff, how do you see this? You picked Georgia last week too, I think.
Yes, I did. I like LSU to win somewhere around, you know, somewhere between 10 to 14 points.
There was a story before the Georgia game that appeared in Saturday's New York Times about Les Miles and his habits. By the way, I guess he'll be addressing the media today, right?
Yeah.
He has the same thing, according to this writer, Brett Michael Dykes, every day for lunch and for dinner. At lunch, he has a Cobb salad with grilled chicken and ranch dressing. And for dinner, he has grilled fish and steamed vegetables.
Really?
Yeah. And he's not a thin man, as we know, so I would imagine he might be having a little dessert with those offers. But says he's only had like 6 beers since he became head coach at LSU. And he likes some of his favorite musical artists, T. Real Lee and Prince Rick. Do you know anything about those, Cody?
That's not anything that I've listened to.
Yeah, so he likes rap music, he says, like hip-hop stuff. So he's a hip guy, isn't he?
He's also said, though, that he said this a couple years ago, that he barely ever has the radio on when he's driving to work, so it allows him to think. So I don't. Maybe that's what his kids are listening to, and he just happens to listen to it as well.
Well, he said some of it really moved him. And let's see here. He says, I was thinking about it curiously, if he had a last meal, you think he would really go to town if he had a last meal. He says, I'd have a New York strip, medium. I'm going to have it with all the Cajun spice, salt, and heavy, heavy pepper. It's going to be about an inch or inch and a half to 2 inches thick. It's going to be real, real red. It's going to be pink. I'm going to have cream corn, a little mashed potatoes, but not much. This is his last meal, by the way, too. A salad, Diet Coke, and he says Blue Bell ice cream. Interestingly, he chooses a fine ice cream company, but not a Louisiana ice cream company for his last meal. And there's no Raisin Cane's here. He's a big sponsor for Raisin.
Well, outside of the Cajun spices, that's a very Midwest meal, to be honest with
you. Yeah, so I would imagine Todd Graves may be a little upset about this story that appeared in the New York Times. He's a colorful guy, though, and it did mention here, though, that there was a poll earlier this year that showed that only 40% of the people in Louisiana support his coaching at LSU, which is about where Governor Jindal is. And we know the governor's had his problems, but Les Miles is 89-22, best record in the history of the school. Why do people not love Les Miles the way they loved Nick Saban before he defected, Cody Worsham?
I guess you contrast the success that Saban's had over the last few years with Miles, and I think that 2011 national championship game really I think his numbers, Miles wins that game, his numbers are much higher, and that's probably a pretty obvious statement. But I wonder if you said he had 6 beers since he took over at LSU. I wonder if he had all 6 after that game, because that couldn't have been an easy night for him. And I think that perception of Miles being good but not better than Saban may have just set his numbers down in Louisiana a little bit. And I think it has to do with fans being just a little bit spoiled. I think Saban spoiled them, Miles spoiled them early with success, and it's been a few years since a national title.
Well, the LSU-Alabama game in some ways has become like the Army-Navy game. It's worth about 5 or 6 wins or losses, depending on who wins or loses, at least in the minds of the LSU fans. So no matter what happens between now and the Alabama game, Jeff, that'll be a big win in Tuscaloosa.
And it'll be a big game. And, even let's say if LSU does go in there with 2 losses, let's say if they somehow slip up against Florida or Ole Miss or maybe even this Saturday in Starkville. I think LSU goes into that game with a chance because you got a guy like Zach Mettenberger who has proved that he could go. I mean, he could put up to me, and Jim, you've been watching LSU football a lot longer than I have, but I think that performance in Georgia, and considering everything, all the storylines, I think that might be one of the best performances an LSU quarterback has ever had on a Saturday afternoon or Saturday night. I mean, it's right up there with Rohan Davies' 5-touchdown game. And, Jamarcus Russell had some good games towards the end of his tenure. And Mock and Flynn and some of the old-timers as well, Tommy Hodson. But that was impressive for him not to throw 1 interception, 372 yards, convert a 3rd-and-22 when it looked like there was no hope. Because of that, LSU will have a chance to beat Alabama.
And finally, tonight, the Saints are playing 3-0 against Miami, 3-0 in the Superdome. What do you think?
I like the Saints to win, so they're a little overconfident when they face my Bears next Sunday.
Cody?
Yeah, I like the Saints. I think the offense has yet to hit on all cylinders, and I think tonight may be the night that they get that going, and the defense just looks so much better with new coordination. So I think that the Saints are off to a really good start, and I would be I would expect them to handle Miami pretty easily.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, and both of you are predicting victory for Louisiana State University this Saturday against mighty Mississippi State. We'll see. Take care, Jeff. See you, Cody. We're joined now by two talented brothers from New Orleans, Brennan and Zachary Manuel. They are the sons of the fabulous singer Philip Manuel, who's been on our show a few times. And these guys are involved in a few different pursuits than their dad, but they are significant in their worlds. Brennan, you're a fashion designer, correct?
Yes, I am. Correct.
And are you the elder or the younger?
Yeah, I'm the oldest.
Okay. And
Four and a half years.
And Zachary is a film director. So,
yep, that's right.
And a few days ago, you were both in New York City. What were you doing there?
You want to start first, Brennan? Yeah, I'll go ahead. Well, we both were in New York City to showcase different things we had accomplished. Zach was up there to show his first narrative feature at the New York Film Academy, and I was up there because I had my first fashion show in New York during New York Fashion Week on behalf of Fuse New York Fashion Week, which is an organization that provides independent designers like myself the opportunity to present my collections on a global platform during New York Fashion Week, of course.
Well, Zach is 24 and Brennan is 29.
Hopefully, I live long enough.
I think you'll be fine. You'll get to 49, but you got a lot to do between now and then. And
you're right.
Zach was one of Gambit's 40 under 40. You went to college in California, right? Majored in film production.
Yeah, I got out of NOCA, I guess, in 2007 for media arts. Then I went to a school called Chapman University in Orange County, California, for about 2 years until I kind of fell out of love with the screenwriting program, and then I came back to New Orleans.
And you made your first documentary when you were 17?
It was called Exodus. The story was kind of detailing the influx of Hispanic workers and people's families into New Orleans post Katrina, that's what got me the 40 under 40 recognition. I think it was just a timing and a subject matter thing that allowed it to be seen like that. But it was good. It was a good experience.
Well, it's interesting that your dad, who, as I stated, and we have heard, is one of the best singers in a state that produces many great singers, has encouraged you to go your separate directions, and that you've done, going in a different line of work than he did. Brennan, you specialize in menswear, don't you, as a fashion designer?
Correct.
Okay. Now, what makes a well-dressed man these days?
A well-dressed man, it's a personal thing. I think style is very personal. There's no one-size-fits-all, just like the definition of happiness. And I think once a man finds a good style that works for him, he can find different clothing items that cater to that style, and he doesn't have to be susceptible to trends. But usually it starts with three things: fit, fabrication, and functionality. Those are extremely important. You want clothing that fits your body type and accentuates the different parts of, like, the male physique that, helps you stand out, look more masculine. There are a lot of subtle nuances, but it's definitely a personal thing, and you make mistakes. It takes some time, but, it's doable. You can learn it because menswear, unlike womenswear, not knocking womenswear, but menswear is less susceptible to trends. So it allows you time to cultivate a style that works for you.
Fit, fabrication, and functionality. Well, not everybody is blessed with a great physique. Can a morbidly obese man like Rush Limbaugh look good in clothes?
he can. I mean, that is the point of a well-tailored men's suit.
Okay, and what about a very slender man like Governor Jindal?
He can as well. That was the American suit came about. I'm not sure if I'm getting the time right, but around like maybe the early 1920s, maybe the early times of Hollywood, where they would find people to act in films who, you know, might have not looked like the Brad Pitts or the George Clooney's now. So they needed a way to make these men look larger than life on screen. Hence, the costume designers found ways to build upon like the ideal male physique and incorporate it into these suits. And they had these men wear these suits on film, you know, and it would just make them, you know, look bigger than they were. It would accentuate the shoulders, bring in the waist, and it just made them look more in shape than they were.
Do you ever shake your head and when you see a guy, maybe a guy who has a lot of potential as far as how he carries himself and how he looks, and he just doesn't measure up to your standards by the way he dresses?
No, like all the time.
I have tough standards, but I do hope that he would realize his potential, because I do think we do judge people because we'll never meet everyone, so 80% of what you bring to the table in any encounter is presentation, and I think it's extremely important. And it's not a vanity thing, it's just the way humans perceive things by, you know, sight first. And it says a lot about a person, I think.
Well, Zachary, the film director, who is the younger of the two, has a first feature-length film, Life Evil, Live Evil. And it was shown at the New York Film Academy. Tell us about Live Evil.
So it's been a process. The process began, I think, in September of 2011, actually, when I worked at the Contemporary Arts Center, and a friend of mine approached me. You know, basically, funny story, we're the only two black males who worked there. So he approached me, a good friend of mine, Cairo Kwame, who produced and wrote the script, and, you know, related on that front, first of all, but then we, you know, soon realized that we were both filmmakers. He presented the script to me, which at the time was called Dilemma, which is kind of an occult philosophy from Aleister Crowley. So, you know, I read the script, and I studied psychology in college, so I had an interest in serial killers and kind of the mindset of serial killers. So it enticed me, and I brought it to my crew with my company, the Greenhouse Collective, and you know, a couple months later, we were in pre-production and we were getting started on the film. So I think we shot in March, the end of March, going into early April of 2012. And we worked up until the New Orleans Film Festival. We actually premiered the film under the name Dilemma at the New Orleans Film Festival. Sold out the audience, had, you know, great response from there. But since then, it's kind of been this ongoing process to get the film distributed and to find a distributor who can work with the film. And it's very niche, you know, it's found footage psychological thriller, so it's not like, it's not your cup of tea film. It's not, you know, something that you might see on a, you know, on television possibly, but we're trying to find the right fit for it right now with the right company. So that's been the process.
Well, good luck.
Some rebranding.
Zachary is 24, already an accomplished film director, and his brother Brennan is 29 and already on his way to being one of the top fashion designers in our country. I do have a question, and we're short on time, but Jordan wants to know where the two of you went to school in New Orleans. Where did you go to high school?
We both went to Ben Franklin. Brennan, you went to math and science, right?
Yeah, I went to the New Orleans Center for Science and Math when it was on Delgado's campus in the morning. Right. And then the other half of the day I went to Ben Franklin.
Yeah, and I went to Ben Franklin, and then I also attended NOCA for Media Arts.
Well, congratulations on doing so well so soon, and I'm sure your dad is somewhat proud of you.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
They're endlessly supportive, and we're lucky.
You are indeed, but you're doing your family well in the city that you grew up in well. And congratulations, Zach and Brennan, on what you're doing, and we look forward to an update.
Thank you. Thank you. Can I plug one more thing?
Sure, go ahead. We're short, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Yeah, my company, The Greenhouse Collective, is producing what will be our third feature right now. I did a documentary feature before I did Live Evil, but this one's called The Shotgun Waltz. We're producing it with another director, Ji Eun Choi, who has been pretty much, you know, the closest thing to a mentor or professor to me since I returned from school. But look the project up. The website's called theshotgunwaltz.com. Right now we've been through pre-production for about a year, almost a year and a half right now. And we're
okay, we got a roll. But thank you, Zach. Thank you, Brennan. Thank you for listening, everybody. And we'll be following the government shutdown, possibly. Until tomorrow, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.